the Israeli Prime Minister has approved plans to invade the city of Rafah in the Gaza Strip, rejecting a new ceasefire proposal by Hamas. The Palestinian Islamic Jihad says the US is complicit in the Israeli onslaught on Gaza, calling Washington's limited aid delivery as an act of hypocrisy. And Hezbollah has warned Israel that the Lebanese resistance movement is prepared for any escalation of hostilities by the regime. Thank you for joining us. In today's top story, Israel's Prime Minister has rejected a new ceasefire proposal by the Hamas resistance movement that included the release of the regime's captives in exchange for the release of Palestinian abductees. Benjamin Netanyahu's office issued a statement following a war cabinet meeting in Tel Aviv. However, the statement said a delegation would leave for Qatar to discuss Israel's position on a potential agreement. It also said Netanyahu had approved plans for a military operation in Rafah, the southern Gaza city where more than a million people are sheltering. Earlier, Hamas said under this proposal, the occupying Israeli forces should leave Gaza. Hamas said its proposal also included the return of displaced Palestinians to their homes and providing them with aid. The exchange of Palestinian abductees with Israeli captives held in Gaza was included as well. The Israeli military has conducted new attacks on different locations across Gaza. Our correspondent in the central city of Deir al-Balah joined us earlier to give us the details. Let's take a listen.
In the meantime, the Israeli occupation artillery maintained its shelling towards the eastern part of several areas of Gaza Strip, particularly here in Deir al-Balah city and Al-Mughraga neighborhood and even Al-Nusayrat refugee camp. Heavy artillery shelling reached those areas, and that shelling actually was maintained over the night. And even in Jabalia refugee camp and in Khan Yunis city, the Israeli artillery also maintained and continued their attacks and airstrikes. In the meantime, the central areas of Khan Yunis city and Jabalia refugee camp also were hit relentlessly by those Israeli continuous airstrikes. Several residential buildings destroyed over those cruel attacks.
A rare shipment of food aid has arrived at the Gaza Strip's coastline in a first after a move after more than 5 months of Israeli onslaught, which has pushed the territory to the brink of famine. The aid consists of more than 200 tons of food and water and is now being unloaded. The consignment has been sent by World Center Kitchen Charity with the help of Spanish aid group Open Arms. The group says a second aid package is also ready to sail to Gaza from Cyprus. The food is planned to be distributed in the nearly flattened northern Gaza. The United Nations has warned that a quarter of the population of the Gaza Strip faces starvation and the crisis is growing. That's amid persisting Israeli blockade on the territory. We've been holding an exclusive interview with the deputy leader of the Palestinian Islamic Jihad movement. In it, he details the latest ceasefire plan proposed by the resistance in Gaza, but casts doubt on Israeli willingness to reach a political settlement. Let's take a listen.
A new proposal was submitted, which divides the agreement, meaning that the first phase would begin, which includes the prisoner swap, and we agreed to add other elements to it, which would include a withdrawal from the Rashid Street and the Salah al-Din Square, which would allow for the return or guarantee the return of the displaced to their homes in the north of the Gaza Strip and Gaza City. The second phase, which includes the swap of the soldiers, which must include guarantees for an end of the war, an end to the aggression, and an end to the ceasefire. And the third phase would include pledges to begin the reconstruction of Gaza. We believe that the Israeli government, because It includes a number of members of the far right will not respond, and it has maneuvered. There is maneuvering on the part of the Netanyahu government.
Hindi, however, said that such Israeli maneuvering will not lead anywhere because of Palestinian steadfastness. He said the resistance is carrying out operations in areas which Israel claims to have captured, including in the north of the Strip and in Khan Yunis to the south. The resistance official also highlighted the U.S. complicity in the Israeli genocide in Gaza.
In this aggression, there is American agreement with Israel. And the American administration is a complete accomplice with Israel, despite the crocodile tears which they are shedding. So the goals are to eliminate the resistance, and these are American-Israeli joint strategic goals. So the goals are the same, but there is a disagreement regarding the priorities. The Americans talk, for example, about sparing civilians, but the civilians are being killed with American weapons and bombs. And some of these weapons reach Israel even behind the back of the Congress.
Hindi described as an act of hypocrisy the U.S. delivery of limited aid to Gaza through airdrops and temporary seaports while delivering weapons to Israel. He said the U.S. is attempting to mislead the international conscience and buy time for Israel. Hindi also pointed to Israeli threats to invade the refugee-packed city of Rafah, describing them as meaningless given the large extent of Israeli losses and casualties elsewhere in Gaza, which he stressed the regime is concealing. Columnist and political analyst Saeed Shahabi tells us about the two major failures of Israel since its creation, despite committing all sorts of crimes and atrocities. Let's take a listen.
There are a few points here. Number one, Israel, after 75 years of occupation, has not secured its own security. For 75 years, there have been only wars, crimes, genocidal policies. They have been repeatedly criticized by international bodies. So on the security front, they have failed to achieve their own security, despite what is said about their sophisticated security systems and sophisticated military hardware. They have failed. This is number one. Number two, when they waged the war on Hamas and on Palestinians in the last 4 months since October the 9th, when they started their operations against the Palestinians, they declared and they said that our aim is to destroy and demolish the resistance movement, especially Hamas. But now, after 4 months or almost five months, they have failed to do it. They have not been able to defeat the resistance movement. And this is what happened in the last, as I said, 75 years. They have never been able to defeat the resistance movement. On the other hand, they have been bombing the citizens, the ordinary civilians in Gaza, and sometimes in Jerusalem.
Meanwhile, ground fighting rages on across the Gaza Strip, with Palestinian resistance fighters repelling attacks by Israeli forces. The military wing of the Hamas resistance movement, the Al-Qassam Brigades, says it has killed four Israeli soldiers in central Gaza. The group says the regime's troops were targeted while moving explosive devices to a building in the Al-Zahra municipality. In a separate operation there, Al-Qassam fighters carried out rocket attacks against five Israeli Merkava tanks. The Al-Quds Brigades also launched mortar shells at a gathering of regime soldiers. Israel says it has lost 250 of its troops since the regime's ground invasion of Gaza began in late October. Palestinian groups, however, say the actual number of regime's casualties is much higher, and Israel is hiding it to avoid public anger. The Hezbollah resistance movement warns it is prepared for expansion of hostilities with the Israel regime if necessary. Hezbollah made the comment in a statement shortly after it responded to a series of Israeli attacks on its positions in southern Lebanon. The movement said it targeted the regime's military bases and gatherings of soldiers with rockets and missiles. Hezbollah and Israel have been exchanging fire across Lebanon's southern border since the regime launched its onslaught on Gaza in early October. Meanwhile, Israel continues with its deadly attacks on southern Lebanon amid tensions with the Lebanese resistance movement Hezbollah. Our correspondent in Beirut, Maryam Saleh, joined us earlier for an update on the latest developments.
That there was heavy shelling from the Israeli side, and we're seeing an increased amount of air shelling, more than artillery fire, which was basically the norm in the beginning of the confrontations. Now you have a lot of shelling on the outskirts of several villages, like Al-Mashab, like Ramia, for example, but you have certain towns like Meis Jabal and Kfar Kila, for example, where you have a lot of residential areas have been completely turned into rubble. And despite that, you see, and we noticed, you know, from our authorities that the Israelis seem to go and once again shell the same place, even if that residential area, a certain residence or a group of houses or buildings were, like we said, completely demolished, the Israelis still once more target that same area. Analysts are saying that this is part of Israel's frustration and the fact that they do not have enough data when it comes to their targeting. Hezbollah's fire has also reached the Israeli posts in several areas. We also know that Hezbollah has been attempting to target Israeli soldiers whenever they spot them. We know that there was a group of soldiers in the vicinity of the Birkat Risha post, and Hezbollah said it targeted that group of soldiers by a Burkan rocket.
Another week of pro-Palestinian rallies in Yemen. Huge crowds of demonstrators once again took to the streets across the country to condemn the U.S.-Israeli genocide in Gaza and urge the Yemeni army to continue its operations against Israel. For more details, our correspondent Abdul Latif Awashali joined us earlier from the site of the rally in the capital, Sana'a.
Despite the sunny and hot weather, the people here, and also despite they're being fasting today, you know, it's Ramadan, but the people have chosen to gather here. They came from across the city to gather in the capital, Sana'a, and also in other cities to express their solidarity with the Palestinian people. They said they can't just remain passive while witnessing the oppressed people of Palestine suffer from killings and being starved to death by at the hands of the Israeli regime. They have to do something. They have to demonstrate. They have to keep provoking the Yemeni army to escalate its operations in the Red Sea and Gulf of Aden. And today we've seen them being happy after hearing the speech of Sayyid Abdul Malik al-Houthi yesterday, saying that the naval operations now will be escalated and now they will target the Israeli linked ships, not only in the Red Sea and Bab al-Mandab Strait, but also in the Indian Ocean and in the South Africa. The people today are very happy. They said they will keep telling the Yemeni army and urging the Yemeni army to keep escalating its operations.
The Yemeni army says it has carried out fresh attacks on U.S. and Israeli vessels in the Indian Ocean as it expands the scope of its pro-Palestinian and retaliatory operations.
Another victory for the oppressed Palestinian people and in retaliation for the American-British aggression against our country. The naval units of the Yemeni armed forces carried out an operation targeting the Israeli ship Pacific 01 in the Red Sea with a number of suitable naval missiles. Meanwhile, our forces carried out an operation targeting an American destroyer in the Red Sea with a number of drones and successfully achieved its objectives. In implementing the directives of our leader, Sayyid Abdul Malik Badruddin al-Houthi, in another victory for the oppressed Palestinian people who are being subjected to aggression and siege in the Gaza Strip, and in response to the calls of the Yemeni people and all the free people of the nation, the Yemeni armed forces began to expand the scope of their operations against Israeli ships, those linked to Israel or those heading to the ports of occupied Palestine, to include the Indian Ocean to the Cape of Good Hope. Accordingly, the Yemeni armed forces warn all Israeli ships heading to or coming from the ports of occupied Palestine, not to pass through the Cape of Good Hope. Otherwise, they will be a legitimate target for our armed forces. The Yemeni armed forces, within the framework of implementing these directives, carried out three operations against three Israeli and American ships in the Indian Ocean, using a number of suitable naval missiles and drones, and all three operations successfully achieved their objectives. The Yemeni armed forces will persist with their military operations, enforcing a blockade on Israeli navigation in the Red and Arabian Seas, as well as the Indian Ocean, until a ceasefire is achieved and the siege on Gaza is lifted.
Iran's foreign minister has called for a united endeavor by the Muslim world against Islamophobia. In an online post on X, Hossein Amir Abdullahian said the aim should be creating an effective deterrence against seditious moves that are opposed to lasting peace and security. The top diplomat added that hegemonic powers are doing everything to distort the image of Islam before the world public opinion and depict it as a threat. Amir Abdullahian describes such policies as a plot, stressing that Islam has always promoted peace and mutual respect amongst different people and religions. He made the comments on the occasion of the International Day to Combat Islamophobia, which is marked on March 15th. The International Court of Justice says it will hold hearings in Nicaragua's case against Germany for aiding Israel in its genocidal war on Gaza. The World Court said the hearings will take place on April the 8th and 9th. According to Nicaragua, Germany is violating the 1948 Genocide Convention and the 1949 Geneva Conventions on the laws of war in the occupied Palestinian territories. Earlier this month, Nicaragua asked the ICJ to issue emergency measures requiring Berlin to stop military aid to Israel and reverse its decision to stop funding UNRWA. Iran condemns the U.S. instrumental and political use of human rights in its foreign policy. It says the U.S. is the main suspect when it comes to the violation of human rights. In a post on his X account, Iran's foreign ministry spokesman said the U.S. cannot expunge its complicity in the Gaza genocide by targeting Iran with human rights propaganda. Nasser Kanani also underlined that Washington's move to airdrop humanitarian aid into Gaza would not compensate for its unflinching support for Israel. The U.S. recently backed an anti-Iran report by a U.N. fact-finding mission. The report accused Iran of committing what it claimed to be crimes against humanity during foreign-backed riots in the country in 2022. Iran dismissed the allegations, saying the report was based on incorrect and biased information and lacked any legal credibility. Well, that's it for this hour's bulletin. Take care for now.
This is IRIB English Radio. With you early in the morning. With you at midday. With you till the night's end. IRIB English Radio.
Thirty ayahs, 30 days. In the name of God, salam and welcome to the program. A monotheist person not only reflects on the Quran, but also tries to explain the ayahs of this heavenly scripture to others and make them familiar with its teachings. explicating of the Quranic teachings, first of all, was the duty of the Prophet and his infallible successors. Every faithful too, according to the extent that they had learned from the Ahlul Bayt, embarked on this heavenly duty. So the ulema, Muslim scholars, took over this duty after the occultation of the 12th infallible successor of the Prophet, Imam Mahdi, may God hasten his reappearance, and have seriously continued this job till the present day. Today, this duty has become highly important due to the broad assault of enemies against the beliefs of Islam and humanity. In the fourth episode of Ramadan special series, we will explain Ayah 186 of Surah Al-Imran of the Noble Quran. The ayah focuses mainly on the tradition of testing human beings by God. Please stay with us. The arrival of the blessed month of Ramadan is indeed the blowing of the breeze of Allah's mercy. This blessed month paves the way to go up and achieve success in spiritual fields. Stepping in the path of success is not easy. It needs relentless effort and hope in the goal. But to reach the goal, we have to sacrifice things. This world has been created in a way that reaching the summit is not feasible except through crises and troubles. A person who deems no value for stepping in this way or has left it in the course should not expect to reach the summit. It is unjust to put a person who has made effort for a long time and passed behind many crises in the same position as the one who has been sitting idly or he who has made less effort. This rule is true for societies too. A society should make effort to push behind crises and obstacles rather than sacking other societies and nations. The Western civilization has built its system through pillaging of resources and preserves of other nations. Sometimes the faithful think that mere belief is sufficient to attain success and bliss in this world and the hereafter. But it is the divine tradition to test individuals and societies with calamities and hardships. God tells the faithful in Ayah 186 of Surah Al-Imran of the Noble Quran, "You will surely be tested in your possessions and your souls, and you will surely hear from those who were given the book before you and from the polytheist much affront. But if you are patient and God-weary, that is indeed the steadiest of courses." This tradition of testing is practiced presently as it has always been. God also says in Ayah 214 of Surah Baqarah, "Do you purpose that you shall enter paradise, though there has not yet come to you the like of what befell those who went before you? Stress and distress befell them, and they were convulsed until the apostle and the faithful were with him and said, 'When will Allah's help come? Look, Allah's help is indeed near.'" Effort and success go side by side each other. Nothing is prepared for anyone freely. Reaching the summit of success means confronting and struggling challenges and barriers. An Islamic society constantly faces crises to grow and prosper. God's assistance will come in the heat of the crises if the faithful act properly. This will increase their belief in the unseen. In Ayahs 123 and 129 of Surah Al-Imran, God, in order to encourage Muslims to resist firmly in the Battle of Uhud, reminds them of the Battle of Badr as the first armed encounter of Muslims and disbelievers. God wants to show how He sent His help to the faithful in the middle of crisis and to make their hearts firm and sure for the next crisis in the Battle of Uhud. He says, And certainly Allah helped you at Badr when you were abased. So be wary of Allah so that you may give thanks when you, the Prophet, were saying to the faithful, is it not enough for you that your Lord should aid you with 3,000 angels sent down? Yes, if you are steadfast and God-wary and they should come at you suddenly, your Lord will aid you with 5,000 marked angels. And Allah did not appoint it but as a good news for you and to reassure with it your hearts. And victory comes only from Allah, the Almighty, the All-Wise. Progress and success are gained step by step and through endeavor. To go to the upper steps, you need to have perseverance and persistence. It is not an easy job, especially in the face of unexpected problems and obstacles. So one should be steadfast and have hope in God's help rather than means and facilities. During the COVID-19 pandemic, the Islamic Republic of Iran started laboriously researching on the disease and, in spite of illegally and cruelly imposed sanctions, achieved astounding results. Consequently, the World Health Organization approved the country's effort and the name of the Islamic Republic of Iran was put in the list of the producers of coronavirus vaccine. It is the habit of the Islamic Republic to pass through crises to make opportunities out of them, no matter the U.S. and Zionist-controlled media conceal the progresses and breakthroughs of the Iranian scientists and researchers. Take two persons who want to take the entrance exam of universities. One of them enjoys every facility such as private teacher, additional courses and classes, extra books and materials and so on. He gains the 5th rank in the exam. Another one gains the 50th rank without having any of the aforementioned facilities. Besides, he had to work for a livelihood. It is quite clear that the latter's ranking is more valuable than the former's. This is true for the Islamic Republic. The Islamic Republic of Iran has undergone different crises for 45 years. Some of these crises were enough to destroy any system and country. So, it is a miracle that this country and this system has not only survived through all crises and conspiracies, but has also made incredible progresses in a big variety of fields. Ramadan is the month of patience and resistance, and fasting is the symbol of a struggle against carnal and personal desires. Basically, patience has an unbreakable bond with fasting. Patience against hunger, thirst, sins, pressures, hardships, etc. exist in fasting. Oneself strongly invites him or her to carnal desires, eating and drinking. But a fasting person resists against all these invitations and trains the self to become powerful and firm. A man with a feeble willpower will lose control in the face of transient pleasures, while a man with a strong willpower will stand firmly against worldly pleasures and pleasures of flesh with the aim of reaching sublimity and perfection in human spirituality.
Food for thought.
Hello everyone. Let us ponder on what the Commander of the Faithful, Imam Ali ibn Abi Talib, peace be upon him, has quoted from his cousin, Prophet Muhammad, blessings of God upon him and his progeny, on the rules of fasting. Whoever fasts during the month of Ramadan, out of faith and seeking Allah's pleasure and guards his ears, eyes, and tongue from harming others, Allah will accept his fasting and forgive his past sins.
Iranian Radio, Global Mission. This is IRIB English Radio.
This is A to Z. An introduction into Islamic lifestyle. Today's lesson, how are we purified in the holy month of Ramadan? Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. So dear friends, it is such an honor to be here. Holy month of Ramadan. What a beautiful month indeed. Yes, it is a little bit difficult and there are some trials and hardships that come along with the holy month of Ramadan. But by the grace of Allah, it is a month which is the holiest of months. It is the most beautiful of months. It is the month in which the Holy Quran has been revealed. It is the month in which we find the nights of Qadr, the Laylatul Qadr, these nights of Qadr, of course, of destiny, of power, of fate. This is such a beautiful month to be witnessing in our lives. So we're talking about how we are purified in the holy month of Ramadan. Now, of course, these are discussions which, you know, they can last hours, but we try our best to kind of condense them as much as we can with the help and the grace of the Almighty Allah. So how does the holy month of Ramadan purify us? And one thing that we want to keep in mind, because we're always talking about achieving that pure and blessed Islamic lifestyle, is that all of the things that we learn in the holy month of Ramadan or that we do in the holy month of Ramadan are things which we should continue and at least try our best to implement in our Islamic lifestyle in the months that are non-holy month of Ramadan, if you will. So in the rest of our life, we should be able to inculcate these things that we learn in the holy month of Ramadan into our Islamic lifestyle and really make it a part of our Islamic lifestyle.
Ramadan al-mustabin jaa bin-nur al-mubin. Ramadan, Ramadan, Ramadan al-qanitin.
Welcome back. This is A to Z on IRIB English Radio. So, dear friends, we're talking about how the holy month of Ramadan purifies us. Again, this is a very, extensive subject. It's not something that you can easily cover in a few minutes. But primarily, if we go to the core and the essence, I guess there are two things. Really, it's really one thing. So let's just kind of start with the one thing and then explain how it's two things. So the one thing is that it establishes and brings us closer to the Almighty Allah. So this is primarily how it purifies us. The ultimate end result is that we become closer to the Almighty Allah. But something under this is this idea that because we stop eating and drinking, what that does is that it separates us from the materialistic aspect of our own selves and of the world. So when we disconnect from the material aspect of ourselves and the material aspect of the world, then clearly the result is what we just spoke about, which was this stronger spiritual, metaphysical connection with the Almighty Allah. Now, of course, the only way that you can connect with Allah is if you disconnect with everything that is not Allah. Now, that is, I guess, the very essence of what we're talking about. Of course, the discussion is open to many other different things, but this is how we are purified in the holy month of Ramadan, because we end up cutting ourselves off from these very base and material aspects of ourself, so that our spiritual aspect can become strengthened and become powerful and establish a very beautiful connection with the Almighty Allah.
IRIB English Radio. Our website is parsetoday.ir.
You can email us at englishradio@irib.ir.
The Zionist regime's propaganda dropped from the air is designed to demoralize Palestinians and get them to turn on each other, yet often has the opposite effect. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Stay tuned for more. Middle East Eye wrote, Israeli regime forces are using psychological warfare on the 2.3 million residents of the Gaza Strip to try to demoralize them, spread disinformation, and turn them against the resistance group Hamas. The primary tools of such campaigns are leaflets dropped from planes and balloons, propaganda tactics used in the two world wars by both sides, and in the American attacks on Vietnam and Iraq. During those conflicts, the leaflets called on groups to surrender. The German Nazi Joseph Goebbels said about the leaflets dropped by the Allies, "Their leaflets are addressed to the weakest points in the nation. They are weapons, and we must be careful with all weapons." One of the present Israeli regime campaign, Aliyah Kassab, 23, said, "When leaflets were dropped on Gaza 2 months ago, my little brothers were happy to see colored papers falling from the sky. They thought it was a new interesting activity, but the rest of us were terrified. We knew the consequences." Recently, and just a few days away from the start of Ramadan, the Zionist regime forces airdropped leaflets on Gaza, marking the Muslim holy month. Palestinians denounced it as a form of psychological torture. The leaflets call on citizens to feed the needy and speak kindly during a time when hundreds of thousands in the besieged territory are at risk of starvation because of the Israeli blockade on food and water. Scores of Palestinians have died because of dehydration and malnutrition since the start of the war on October 7th, following the Zionist regime's decision to cut off all food, aid, electricity and fuel for the already besieged enclave. The leaflets written in Arabic had images of lanterns typically used as Ramadan decorations. They included a prayer asking God that fasts are accepted and sins are forgiven and that Palestinians in the region have a delicious breaking of the fast. The 2023-24 assault is not the first time the Zionist regime has deployed leaflets as a tool of warfare. In 2014, they were used extensively to turn civilians against each other and spread terror. And in 2018, they were dropped into Gaza's neighborhoods to evacuate the area near Gaza's eastern border. The Zionist regime's leaflets are often tailored to specific audiences, with their messages customized based on the demographics and neighborhoods of the residents being targeted. Starting in October 2023, the Israeli regime militarily divided the Gaza Strip into blocks and subsequently, according to that division, leaflets were dropped. A leaflet dropped on January 6, 2024 said, "Urgent warning to inhabitants of the following neighborhoods and blocks: Al-Amal, Al-Sadra, Al-Faruq, Ain Jalut, and the blocks 2232, 2339, 2340, 2343, 2347, 2348. And district you are in is considered a battlefield." Threatening messages such as "anyone who chooses not to evacuate from the northern part of Gaza to the south will be considered terrorist" are used to manipulate residents into leaving their homes and abandoning their belongings. One leaflet dropped into the north of Gaza last year said, "No need for you to bring water and food. We will take care of that matter." Yet 800,000 Palestinians in Gaza are now at risk of death due to starvation and thirst. Israeli messaging also often distorts the facts to advance a particular narrative or agenda. This can involve spreading rumors, exaggerating weaknesses, or downplaying its own losses to look stronger. To try to win converts, sometimes the leaflets play on the religious sentiments of the citizens and tie into important dates in Gazan culture. Leaflets dropped by Israeli regime aircraft on February 8, 2024 said, "Marking the day of Isra and Mi'raj, Hamas excluded Palestinians from Al-Aqsa Mosque. Hamas will execute all Gazans from their bright future." Leaflets commonly include a call to action, urging the target audience to take specific steps or make certain decisions, such as to surrender, resist the leadership, or move out of a particular area. Time and again, however, Palestinians in Gaza have learned not to trust what they are told. For example, although they were instructed by leaflets during the current aggression to evacuate further south, the Zionist regime forces later bombed those so-called safe locations. Yasmin Matar, 25, said, "My family and I evacuated 7 times according to the commands given by the leaflets. They said, each time we evacuate to a place they call safe, they drop another leaflet to inform us that it's not safe anymore. In one of the places, we were besieged by Israeli army tanks and helicopters. They didn't even warn us. Yet, the Zionist regime often tries to use these evacuation leaflets as proof to other governments and courts that it is acting humanely by warning civilians before attacks. Another type is leaflet is designed to demoralize citizens, sow doubts in their leadership, and stir up internal conflict. Gaza residents are stressed and scared due to the ongoing Israeli aggression, and this type of pressure makes it more difficult to remain resilient and interconnected. For example, the Zionist regime aircraft 2 weeks ago began dropping small magazines called Al-Waqa, which means the events, containing messages written specifically to encourage people to turn against their own people. But does this method of propaganda work? To some extent, it depends on people's morale. However, as in most previous wars, the answer overall is no. If anything, they breed resentment and reinforce hatred. Rehaf Abu Zarifa, a 22-year-old Gazan programmer, said, "After my family and I evacuated to Khan Yunis, aircraft dropped leaflets, but we were not frightened. I even witnessed people, including my brothers, collecting these flyers to use them to light a fire, since wood and coal are now expensive and hard to find." Life is full of choices. Choose the best option. Visit us at parstoday.ir/en. IRIB English Radio.
Welcome to Israel Watch. On this episode, we will monitor the end of the armistice negotiations and the captives exchange deal in Cairo without reaching an agreement. We will also go over the failure of the occupation forces to achieve the declared goals in the Gaza Strip, which was reflected in more division and disagreement within the War Council and the administration. This is while we are witness to the escalation of protests by the families of the captives who hold Netanyahu responsible. Regarding these topics, I welcome the researcher on Israeli affairs, Mr. Fatih Kolib, with a warm welcome, dear professor. Let us begin with the last round of troops and captives exchange negotiations, which took place in Cairo and ended without any agreement, but they have not exploded yet. If there is a breakthrough in the Cairo negotiations, the reason is due to the intransigence of Netanyahu and Gallant, who cling to the aggression and refrain from any flexibility in responding to the demands of Hamas, especially on the issue of the return of displaced Palestinians to the northern Gaza Strip.
If Mr. Fathi Kolob, with the end of the last round of negotiations in the Egyptian capital, Cairo, without reaching an agreement, can we say that the negotiations have not yet exploded as the Hebrew media indicated?
The results reached by this round of negotiations are a repetition of previous rounds. It was always with American recognition and the recognition of the mediators that the nature of the Israeli position and the raising of the level of the expectations by Netanyahu was the reason for this issue. It seems clear that the Israelis, specifically Netanyahu, only want from this deal and from these negotiations the issue of captives, while the resistance's demands are rightful and legitimate. Today, it has become clear, even at the internal Zionist level, that Netanyahu is the one who wants to prolong the crisis.
I mean, he wasn't serious and he didn't want to.
He does not want to reach an agreement. He wants the war to continue more and more within the framework of what has become known at the internal Israeli level and at the level of the whole world, that this war has become Netanyahu's personal war and not the war of the Israeli enemy.
Despite all the occupation armies' bet on Khan Yunis to achieve the declared goals of removing Hamas and its leaders, these have not been achieved and will not be achieved in years. This is what one of the prominent commentators in the Hebrew media concluded. More than 5 months after the aggression against the Gaza Strip, Commander Yahya al-Sinwar is still free, leading the war against the occupation army and possessing sufficient capabilities. Mr. Fathi Kolob, removing Hamas in Khan Yunis will take years, and Commander Yahya Sinwar is still managing the war on the ground and also the negotiations. What is your assessment of this recognition and the Zionist approval?
I mean, the Israelis speak as if they know all the details of the Gaza Strip, as if they know where Sinwar is, where the resistance leadership is, where the captives are, and in what area they are located. Well, what if the Battle of Khan Yunis ended? This means that it has become clear that the resistance leadership, Sinwar, or the captives are in the north, in the area that the occupation said it liberated. It seems clear that the occupation does not have anything up its sleeve except one issue, which is the issue of killing and destruction.
The Zionist Minister of War, Yoav Gallant, retracted the goal that he announced at the beginning of the aggression against Gaza by completely removing Hamas, only to admit, 5 months after his failure in achieving his goal, that he did not want Hamas as a ruling organization in the Strip. So, dear Professor, how do you explain Gallant's retreat from his goal of removing Hamas once and for all?
Certainly, because it has become more realistic. Today we have reached the fifth month, and until this month, none of the goals has been achieved, especially the one related to the moving of the resistance and its structure. I mean, the Israeli public has not seen any of these promises fulfilled. Therefore, it seems clear that the nature of the divisions and positions they spoke of at the beginning of the aggression will change during the next stage in most cases. I mean, what is talked about in public is different from what is said in secret, specifically within the framework of the negotiating rounds, where the Israelis show some verbal flexibility in relation to not pursuing Hamas leaders during the coming period, but in front of the public, it seems like they are on a boiler and they are unable to fulfill any of these claims.
Yes, the failure to achieve the goals of this aggression was reflected in sharp divisions and disagreements between the occupation's army chief of staff and ministers in Netanyahu's administration. They accused the army of not accomplishing the mission, which required a strong response from its allies. Mr. Fathi Kolob, what is the reason for this dispute that broke out between the chief of staff and the army command and the ministers in Netanyahu's administration?
No, it's been present since the first day. I mean, specifically, it became clear about the nature of the differences between the army and some of the ministers, specifically Netanyahu and his Minister of War. When the army addressed the administration that it wanted a plan for after the aggression phase, It seems clear that the Israeli administration does not have a clear plan to give the army about what it wants from the aggression. The army leaders have said more than once that we are fighting and we have no goal that we want to achieve except what is related to the continuation of the military operation. Therefore, I say that the army has become aware that it is not fighting for the interest of the regime, but rather it is fighting for the future of Netanyahu only.
Therefore, how will this be reflected, and what is the impact of this dispute on the military and political establishment?
The main problem is that Netanyahu wants to sacrifice everything. He wants to sacrifice the army. He wants to sacrifice the security services and the captives. Of course, he is not concerned with the issue of reaching an agreement that frees the captives. Therefore, we find that the divisions are increasing, and it seems clear that the tendency is more toward what he is talking about. It is done by the Israeli army and not by what Netanyahu is talking about, that this war no longer has a specific function that the Israeli army is working on, and at the secret and undeclared level, the army is always demanding the necessity of taking initiatives to stop this process or setting clear goals. What does the political level want, and what does the administration want from this war?
Benny Gantz and Eisenkot, two members of the War Council, want to resign, but they prefer that Netanyahu dismiss them. This is what he told the protesters, according to an analyst in the Hebrew media. Dear Professor, Benny Gantz's resignation, will you find a way to verify it after his trip to Washington? What about the calls for Netanyahu to resign and go for the early elections option?
No, it seems clear that there is a division, whether within the administration or at the level of the War Council. But certainly Gantz wants to leave the administration, but does not want to submit his resignation. He wants to force Netanyahu to make this decision so that Netanyahu is the one who bears responsibility. Because if Gantz and Eisenkot submit their resignations, Netanyahu will interpret that Gantz and Eisenkot fled and withdrew, leaving him alone. In this case, the victor will be Netanyahu. Therefore, the American administration's advice is to continue within the administration until Netanyahu is forced to remove them both. In this case, the defeated will be Netanyahu, so I do not expect Gantz to submit. Rather, he will try to put more and more pressure in order to force Netanyahu to take the step. In most cases, the noose is tightening around Netanyahu's neck, especially since the United States is receiving Gantz alone, apart from Netanyahu. Maybe the Americans now benefit from pretending that Netanyahu does not have the previous legitimacy, so they prefer to continue with Gantz and with Eisenkot.
In the interview, the head of the Zionist opposition, Yair Lapid, calls on Netanyahu to resign, holds him responsible for Operation Al-Aqsa Flood, and says that if he remains prime minister, he will face another catastrophe. Lapid's words against Netanyahu received widespread support on Israeli social media, and these are just some of the comments.
Ori. Netanyahu would not have resigned from his position even if a Palestinian meteorite fell on Jerusalem and completely evaporated it.
Avi.
Question. Do you know a prime minister in existence who would not have resigned after the Meron incident?
Alon.
The man lacks conscience, sense of responsibility, and self-respect.
Miki.
Do you know a healthy country that would not have fled after October 7th with an administration of ruin and its president from day one?
Adi.
If the people do not come out in unison to remove the criminal Netanyahu from power, then we have no right to exist.
Shani.
It's hard to comprehend. This is a petrified regime.
Iran.
It's sad that they're talking to a wall. Netanyahu has made them a nuisance.
Amit.
Never mind. Shame. Let them all go.
MBDF.
No one cares about them. They all only think about their political interests.
Vyojin.
All 120 Knesset members must be sent home.
Your comments, dear professor, what is this reaction to a call for Netanyahu to resign? He described it as a disaster for the regime.
I mean, there seems to be a consensus, even within the Likud party itself, I mean, Netanyahu does not care about anything except his political future. But the question is, if they had been in Netanyahu's place, would they have prevented October the 7th? There are many prime ministers in each one. I mean, there was a disaster during Ehud Olmert's time. There was a disaster during Sharon's time. A misfortune has always happened to any of them. I mean, there is an issue of political opportunism. They always turn divisions and higher interests into direct personal interests. Lapid is no less than Netanyahu, like Gantz, and like all the other occupation leadership. It is true that they differ among themselves, but they are no less bad, and the problem that the enemy suffers from is a structural one.